Good morning. This is Scott Fryman, creator of Deconstructing the Beatles, a series of multimedia films about the composition and recording techniques of the Beatles. And you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for March 28th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, it's spring break and living is easy.
Well, you know, throw on the Speedo, head out to the backyard.
Yeah.
Get some sun.
Chicagoland area is not exactly the best spring break location.
Well, you know, is it going to be sunburn or freezer burn? You never know.
Those are your choices. Did you ever go to an actual spring break as a kid in high school or in college? Did you go somewhere?
In college, I did.
You did?
We usually go to our grandparents or something like that.
Okay. So. Not to one of those raucous resort parties that I see on MTV.
No.
Or I should say, I saw on MTV.
You saw on TV. Well, you also have to remember, down in the Carolinas, it is starting to warm up around that time. Mm. So it's a little different.
So you don't really have to go anywhere. You are there.
It's either raining or it's really warm.
Yeah. So. And speaking of the Carolinas, we have a special guest this week. Mark Brett from Dork 40 is joining us. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
How are you? How is the Carolinas? How are the Carolinas?
Wet right now. Warm and, well, sort of warm and wet. Very wet. It's been raining the last 2 days. So.
How about you? Did you ever go on spring break? Did you ever go to exotic locales like I saw on MTV?
Nah, I always had a job, so... I was always working spring break.
Yeah,
so.
That was me in college too. The wife and I both worked all through college, so we didn't have a week to just we'll just go down south for a while. I'm sure there are people that do it. I have video proof on MTV. Kids, MTV.
It's reality.
It used to be music television. That's what the M is for, not for M people over there. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, and this week we've had some fun watching some movies. You and I both got a chance to see the new Dave Chappelle live comedy specials on Netflix.
Yeah, he had two comedy specials that came up. They were very funny.
He's a very funny man, and basically has been off the grid for the last 10 years.
Yeah, he's sort of entered the Bill Murray sort of way of looking at life, kind of showing up here and there,
doing the work that he needs to get done in order to survive another week, and doing it in a great way,
and sort of on his terms.
Yeah,
both of these hour and a half specials mm-hmm. were written by Dave Chappelle and performed by him, and they were different.
Yeah.
So he did not. The one that I'm sure you want to talk about is the four times he met
O.J. Simpson. Those are some great stories. Mr. Juice, as he refers to him. Those are some great stories. Dave Chappelle has been a great storyteller since the beginning of his career, and pancakes can wait.
Pancakes can wait. The third time I met O.J. Simpson, I was at Michael Jordan's party out at the Kentucky Derby.
Right.
And, of course, Dave Chappelle is hanging out with Chris Tucker.
Right.
And that was the joke, is that... Who would have thought the two guys who were missing were going to be together? And in comes O.J. Simpson. He goes, let's get a picture. He goes, maybe not.
No. I don't think that's a good idea.
It's tough being O.J. now.
It is. It is tough being O.J. You got a chance to go to the movie theater and see Revolver, An Educational Journey with musicologist Scott Fryman.
This is part of the Deconstructing the Beatles series, where Scott Fryman had put together... an entire presentation about the album Revolver, and I previously got to see the one about the White Album, and we've got another one coming up in April.
And those are in theaters.
They are in theaters.
Remind us again, what is this? This is a conversation that he's having, like a lecture, isn't it?
It is a lecture series. He is a person who really loves the Beatles, and he has gone to how these albums were recorded, and he breaks down all the things that they're doing. One of the things that we learn about Revolver, Yellow Submarine is one of the songs in this. And the studio where they were recording was also a studio where they recorded a lot of comedy albums, things like Dudley Moore's comedy album. So the recordings of that time. So underneath the stairs is all those sound effects machines that they used to do for the old radio serials.
Yeah, the Foley artists and exactly. All of the clomping the shoes. Now we're walking in the snow and you got cornflakes for the snow.
Absolutely.
I love that
and
stuff.
And I learned that with chains and water, mm-hmm. That's how you make the waves. That's how they make the waves.
Neat.
And then there's all sorts of fun stuff. But anyway, it was like a party when they were recording Yellow Submarine, which was a children's song on a rock album. So people there, Keith Richards was there, I think. They were at the end of it. They were all marching around the studio mm-hmm. singing this song. And it was just, I mean, you get all sorts of insights on where the songs come from. Basically, the beginning of Sgt. Pepper's began with this album. And this is where they started. They stopped touring. They were now a studio artist. And they were kind of playing around and learning how to use the studio as a piece of their band. Man, just once again, blowing you away of all the knowledge. I'm in a room of people singing the songs along with Scott. And the beauty of this is not about their love lives. This is not about everything going on around the world. It's about how the Beatles kind of created their music and used the studio to make this wonderful album. I listened to Revolver on the way over, and it was a nice sort of way to reminisce with this album, but it certainly wasn't connecting with me other than I knew the songs.
Mm-hmm.
On the way home, I listened to this album again, and all I could do is sit there and just marvel at every one of these songs. There's going to be another one in April. Highly recommended. If you see us on our website, or we put where this is going to be showing in the Chicago area, join us. This is a lot of fun.
And if you need more information about any of those, you can go to Scott Fryman's website, BeatlesLectures.com, and find out all the stuff that he's been working on. What about you, Mark? Mark, you have seen something on TV.
I have indeed, yes. Just last night, I finally got around to watching the first two episodes of Legion, the new X-Men adjacent series on FX.
And tell us your first impressions of this, not quite the X-Men, very different FX series, Legion.
I freaking love it. I will say it is sort of tailor-made to my interests. It's very surreal. There's a lot of presenting questions and not giving you all the answers all at once, things like that. But yeah, it's very good, very very head trippy, very very stylish. Veers alarmingly from comedy to drama to horror, and it all works together. It's marvelous.
Who is Legion?
That is for the show an open question, I think.
Really?
But in the comics, he is the son of Professor X.
Okay.
And may or may not be in this series.
Yeah, no, I don't know. There's some stuff where he's there's some flashback stuff to his father, and he can never quite see his father's face.
But he keeps saying, "Make it so."
Exactly. Exactly.
Indeed, exactly. Yes.
Earl Grey tea,
hot. All right. So, what you're describing really sounds like something that I would like to watch. Is it comparable to anything else that you've seen before?
Oh gosh, I was trying to think of something to compare it to earlier. There have been things like it, but I'm having a hard time thinking of examples.
What you were describing sounds a lot like Twin Peaks to me.
Not as quirky as Twin Peaks.
Okay.
But yeah, that's probably not a bad comparison. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that stylized making something so bizarre that the audience is drawn into the question marks. But what they've done in television for the last 15 years is not give us any answers. And that drives me nuts. I didn't like Lost, for instance,
okay.
Because the questions kept coming. And every time they answered one question, they gave you three new questions every episode.
And Mark, you were as we were preparing for this, you were saying that FX seems to have a unique place in television series right now.
Well, it just seems to me, and this may just be my personal limited experience with the offerings on TV these days, but FX seems to be offering stuff that's a little left of center. They're taking more chances, doing things that are more interesting from a narrative perspective, more stylish, just a notch above, I think. I don't know that Legion would have been picked up by any other network at this point.
Do you think it would have played on Netflix? Netflix seems to be the studio, the network, if you want to call it that, that's taking those chances a lot of times.
Yeah, certainly. There's I'm putting mine like Orange is the New Black is actually a show that now that I think of it, actually kind of reminds me a bit of some of the stuff you see in Orange is the New Black. There's a towards the end of the first episode of Legion, there is a full on song and dance routine. Full cast.
Really?
In Hollywood, they do like the crane shot straight down on the dancers. It is astounding. And they're dancing to a 1960s pop tune by Serge Gainsbourg called Poor Lola.
Really?
Steve already, he's ready
I was
to pick this
I was
up.
Excited for Legion when it was first presented to us. We talked about it at that time. I just haven't had the chance to get to it. This might be on my spring break list. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
What's no opening problem. What's opening this week?
Opening this week, speaking of things that will definitely be trying to get my attention, Ghost in the Shell, the live action remake of the 1995 classic Japanese animation movie is opening this week in the theaters.
And it stars that wonderful voice from Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson. Mark, you know Scarlett Johansson from anything?
A few things, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah, she played that Black Widow chick, I think.
Yes.
In some of the Avengers movies or something.
She is one of my favorite actors working right now. I like just about everything she's in. Are you familiar with the original 1995 Ghost in the Shell?
Yes, peripherally. I don't know that I've seen. That was a series, wasn't it?
No, it was. Short answer, yes. But the standalone 1995 movie is what is being recreated here in live action.
Gotcha. I think I've seen part of the series, but not the actual movie.
Oh, the actual movie is amazing. It is one of my go-to animation pieces. It's simple enough, and it's so elegant, and the art is beautiful.
What's really interesting about this is this seems to be her third film where she's playing maybe a computer. Mm. She was in Her, in Lucy, and then she's in this. So she seems to definitely, she's got a sci-fi element. She's gets cast for. Mm-hmm. She does a great job in all of them.
Yeah, I look forward to this one. I really have high expectations, and I hope this one is going to match my expectations.
Steve, is there an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie coming up?
No, there is not. But there is T2, which is Trainspotting, the sequel, Trainspotting 2, and they're calling it T2, and this just makes us laugh.
Well, anyway, this is a movie that is 20 years in the making.
Yeah, it is the 20 years after the original Trainspotting, and we've got Ewan McGregor reprising his role and quite a few actors reprising their roles, and we'll see what happened 20 years on. Those of you who don't remember Trainspotting, it's a story about heroin and drug use.
An uplifting story.
Cheerful, indeed.
And the fact that they made a sequel to it is pretty amazing to me.
Some people will be shopping. Other people will be playing football.
Mark,
I enjoyed this film originally.
The original film?
Yes.
Mark, did you have a good time with Trainspotting the first time, if you can call it that?
I'm actually a big fan of Trainspotting. I love that movie, yes.
So you look forward to a sequel? Do you think a sequel is in... Is it a good idea?
Do you think they should have dived into the toilet for this one?
We can only hope. I also hope there's lots of dialogue that that most American audiences need subtitles for, because the title text is so very thick.
So that one might be a good one. We the jury is still out on that one. We do have one called The Boss Baby that's opening with Alec Baldwin as the voice of a sarcastic leader of a group of people who is a baby.
Computer animation.
This is computer animation, right? There's not just Alec Baldwin in a wig.
So this is the children's pick for the week.
I'm not sure that it is. I'll have to wait for reviews on that one. It doesn't look great to me.
All right. On Netflix, we seem to have our weekly Netflix movie coming out. We've got one called The Discovery.
Yeah. Netflix did say that 2016 and 2017, they were going to aim to have one release every week of the year. And they are really doing well at this. The Discovery is a sci-fi story about what happens after we've scientifically discovered that afterlife is a real thing. Can we have a love story that takes place that has nothing to do with The Notebook?
Well, this is not Sparks, is it? It isn't. This is a sci-fi type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
This looks very interesting. I look forward to seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads us right into what Steve's going to say, the build-up to Twin Peaks. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is called David Lynch, The Art of Life. It's a documentary about David Lynch and all of the amazing, really bizarre things that he has created in life, including a lot of art. He makes all sorts of things, not just TV shows. He is a creative human.
I guess I would put David Lynch in the same category that I would put someone like David Byrne,
mm-hmm.
who has multiple areas.
Interests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Mark?
Oh, I definitely. Lynch is one of my go-to filmmakers, creators. Well, for pretty much anything he does, I'm going to at least give it a look. One of my favorite David Lynch stories, one of the actors from Twin Peaks, I forget who, they went to visit Lynch at his home. They get there, Lynch is sitting out on his front steps. He's got a magnifying glass and a bunch of little plastic army men, and he's melting them with the magnifying glass and taking pictures as they melt.
And this isn't
just an idea he had, so he just did it.
That is a great picture of David Lynch. He does things that you look at and you go, why is he doing that? And then you realize he's doing that because he can do it, and it's amazing.
Definitely Andy Warhol type of thing, pop art, just sort of, I shouldn't say strange, just willing to take John Waters, willing to see things that are just unique in a unique voice out there.
A little fringy, you got a little bit of a weird bent from a David Lynch, and I love it.
There's always Julie Cruz music in the background. You know, you can't even walk around without hearing it.
Angelo Beldamente is actually in the corner of his apartment playing the violin the whole time. Brings us to our book of the week. And Mark, we brought you in today to talk about Providence, the Alan yes. Moore, I don't want to say comic book, because that's not really fair.
Ah, comic book's fine.
Okay.
I'll call it a funny book, in fact. It's new Alan Moore funny book.
So this is this is another Alan Moore work. You need a lot of mindfulness to be a part of an Alan Moore work.
For this one, I think you do. And this falls in the category of books like From Hell, Watchmen, V for Vendetta, you know, things that are a little more cerebral on the outside.
I think this may be what the last great work we'll see from Moore in comics. He said he's retiring from the form once he finishes this up and a couple of other small things. So I think that this is it. I think this is his last major statement in the comics form. This is Alan Moore's sort of meditation on the works of H.P. Lovecraft. He was an obscure pulp writer who has sort of risen to great fame in the years since his death. Moore is taking all themes and dealing with them in a way that they also deal with all of Alan Moore's big concepts and themes. It's astounding. Yeah,
and you're kind of a person who has a background in Lovecraft too.
Yes.
So would you say that your knowledge of Lovecraft is around where Moore's is when he started writing this story?
When he started work on it, maybe. At this point, Moore has made himself a genuine full-on Lovecraft scholar. He's read all the correspondence. He's read the voluminous letters. He's read everything.
Okay.
He's far surpassed me at this point.
Okay.
I know Lovecraft. I consider myself sort of an amateur Lovecraft scholar. I know a lot about the man and his work. I know so much that when I'm reading Providence, sometimes some of it feels rote to mm-hmm. me. because I know the material so well. But it also, I'm coming to realize as we get deeper into the series, it's we're 11 issues in of 12 issues, with the 12th coming out on March 31st. I'm coming to realize that some of that is that Moore is making this very complicated thing he's writing here feel effortless. He's that good. He's writing about very complex ideas and issues in such a way that it feels like he's not really trying. Which I think is a mark of greatness.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the setting for this. This takes place in the United States, and the name is Providence, so obviously it takes place in Providence.
And part of the story is in Providence, Rhode Island. It's in New England, the New England states generally, which is where much of Lovecraft's writing also took place. It's set in the 1920s, or early 1920s. It follows the protagonist, Robert Black, who is a gay reporter from New York who decides to go out and discover the unseen America. It's sort of he wants to write something as a parallel to the gay experience at that time, mm-hmm. and he does it by going out into the countryside and meeting all these strange people in rural New England, who of course all turn out to be weird supernatural monsters, who are the sort of the basis of the Lovecraft stories, which are written later.
Okay, and you're saying it came across as effortless. Yes. What have you gained in your understanding from this story that you think this is a very good Alan Moore story?
One thing Moore's dealing with here is how Lovecraft went from being this, well, frankly, very obscure pulp writer. He could barely support himself with his writing in his own lifetime. He went from being that to being sort of a cultural phenomenon in the modern age. He's has serious academic literary papers written about him. His works are so permeated the culture to the extent that you can go out and buy like cute stuffed animal toys based on his weird, horrible cosmic god monsters.
He shows up in The Simpsons. They show up in
everything. Exactly. Shows up in The Simpsons. To be fair,
but it's in there. It shows up everywhere.
On, South Park as well.
Okay,
but anyway, yeah. He's sort of tracking how Lovecraft's sort of outsider ideas in his own era have sort of permeated culture in the modern era. How that's much, which I think is why, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling here a bit, but it's very complicated work. That's why the protagonist is gay, I think. Robert Black is part of the gay subculture of the 1920s, very secret, very underground. And now just as the gay subculture has pretty much become mainstream in modern America, or the modern world, a lot of Lovecraft's core ideas have also sort of come to be accepted by modern audiences.
I'm going to go back to one of your early reviews where you were writing about this, because I think the gay subculture is kind of interesting that it was called Lavender at the time, and they used mm-hmm. code words to talk to each other. I was not aware of that before reading this story, and I thought your writing on this book was very interesting.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure homosexuality was still illegal in America in the early 20s. I forget. There probably was. But yeah, at the very least, they would have been ostracized. You know, you'd lose your job, your livelihood. You know, your life would be destroyed if people found out you were gay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they had a sort of a secret subculture that, you know, existed right alongside everything else, where they would talk in public about things that seemed innocuous but were actually setting up dates, talking about their relationships in a way that, you know, no one else knew what was going on.
Okay.
So what else is in Providence? We've got normal people walking around. They become monsters. What's the draw for people to read this book?
If you like horror, there's certainly a lot of horror elements here with people becoming monsters. I think for Moore and for myself, in Lovecraft, there's a certain acknowledgement of... One of Lovecraft's great themes is cosmic horror. The idea that mankind is, you know, small and insignificant in the face of a vast, uncaring universe, which is a pretty dark idea, but I think Moore and myself, I think we draw sort of a sardonic humor from that. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind about life. Whenever you start feeling too self-important or get too wrapped up in your own personal issues, it's good to remember sometimes, take a step back and go, you know, this isn't really important in the grand scheme of anything.
Nice.
It's a great calming influence, mm-hmm. I think. Not something you want to get too wrapped up in, because, of course, it will drive you insane, as often happens to H.P. Lovecraft's protagonists when they get wrapped up in these ideas. And I think that's part of the draw. And I think for Moore in particular, he's interested in the way that our society has sort of come to accept this in some ways. You know, in Lovecraft's time, he was living in the age when modern physics was invented. You know, he's a contemporary of Einstein. The Scopes monkey trial happened when he was just reaching sort of the pinnacle of his writing prowess. So he's very interested in evolution, in the implications of relativity. And these are ideas that were very, very fresh, very much in the headlines, and probably very, very frightening, actually, to the people who were dealing with these ideas at the time. There were very new ideas. Now, you know, we all know this stuff. Many of us have come to accept these things. There's still fear there, I think. The rise of various types of extremist religious fundamentalism in various parts of the world, it's kind of a blowback, a reaction to the idea that mankind isn't important. But most of Western society, I think, has sort of come to accept it, and we're okay with it. We move on past it. And I think Moore is fascinated by the idea that in the space of a century, we've gone from thinking that we are the center of the universe to realizing that we're very much not.
That is very good insight. Thank you very much for that vision of our place in society.
Well, I think you just hit on why Alan Moore is an important writer and why he resonates so well. And there's a depth to his writing that's just you don't find with all writers. Which will bring us to something that I would like to suggest our readers do. Now, Mark enjoys Alan Moore, and I have read Alan Moore stuff. And Alan Moore sent out this great big book back in September that's been sitting there looking at me. And it's looking at Mark, too. We're going to bang this thing out, and we're going to do a conversation about it. So if our listeners want to join us in a month or so, we're going to be reading this book called Jerusalem. And you can find a link to it, to the Kindle version, in our notes. If you want to do an audio version, Audible will allow you to do one too. So you can do it however you want to read this. But with Mark's permission, we're going to invite him back, and we're going to talk about Alan Moore's Jerusalem in 6 weeks or so.
So, Mark, tell us the one-page explanation of what is Jerusalem for our listeners.
Jerusalem is a place history of Northampton, England, written confusingly in sort of Finnegan's Wake. It draws influence from James Joyce, obviously, but also children's cartoons and comics from the early 20th century. It's all over the map.
Wow. And it's another one of those Alan Moore really deep dives into that material.
This is not a comic.
Okay.
We should mention this. This is a novel. And it's a very long one. So you'll get really close to Moore. And as we were kind of playing to get started, one of the things that I brought up was that Moore stuff, a lot like Shakespeare, you kind of start reading it, and it's tough when you get started, and then you get into the flow, and then it just rolls. And this is not an easy... I'm going to suggest that it's not going to be the easiest read, but there's probably a lot of fruit to find there.
Excellent. That sounds great. Sounds like a good assignment for spring break. You can read your copy of Jerusalem along with us, and we can have our deep, deep philosophical discussions about where we are in the universe and who we are. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the fact that you bring your vast knowledge of all this stuff to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My pleasure.
Where can our listeners find more from you, especially your writings?
Primarily at dork40.com. That's my blog about comic books. That's primarily where you'll find me these days.
That's excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot.
Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about
network security, internet security the last few weeks. And we had a special guest on a few weeks ago who gave us a lot of good information. And one thing that we mentioned in that was the idea of using a VPN, a virtual private network.
What is a virtual private network?
Well, the idea is everything that you do on the internet is logged. Everything that you type in, your ISP keeps a list of those.
Your internet service provider. So for me, I use AT&T UVerse. Mm-hmm. For you, you use Mediacom.
Right.
But for some of our listeners, they could be using Comcast or Time Warner or
whatever
Spectrum.
Company it is that you are paying for access to the internet.
So you went to Google or to Yahoo or to Bing or whatever your search engine is, and you put in, I'd like to have information about a brand new automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you start receiving ads showing up for new automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it can be used to market to you.
Right.
Now, that's usually not thought of as a bad thing, but you can search for anything on the web. They know everything you're searching for.
And so a VPN is one way to protect yourselves from people other than Google and your ISP knowing about your activities on the internet.
Now, I want you to remember that, because when we get to our news, we'll mention something and why that this could be important. A VPN, a virtual private network, you basically are searching through that, right? You're using your internet through this VPN.
There is a tunnel that you are moving data through this VPN and not being identified as easily as your single address point of contact.
Now, we saw this in Hunted, the CBS show.
Yes.
Where one of, they won, didn't they? I think they did.
Oh.
That was one of the winners. I just gave away one of the spoilers. But anyway, they had used a VPN to hide where they, you know, so when you do a search,
mm-hmm.
you know, it shows up that you were doing the search at Stockholm, or you're doing it in Austin, Texas, or you're doing
pretending
it in Seattle.
Pretending to be somewhere where you are not geographically.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So there's, and it's random in many ways, so it really is hard to identify you as you.
Right.
Not impossible.
Not impossible. Now, don't forget, Google, if you are logged into Google, you are identifying yourself on Google, so you would have to use a VPN anonymously on these sites in order to be that much more anonymous.
Okay, so this is usually one of the criticisms of this is that since you have to go through another server, that it may slow you down.
True.
But you have to ask yourself whether the privacy you're looking for is more important versus the speed, that mm-hmm. the performance you're looking for. Everything is always a trade-off here or there. And most of the time, we don't really have a problem if somebody knew that you were searching for paint or for a car
right.
or for groceries or something like that. But there are times when this could be a very sensitive type thing, especially if you're working with personal data
mm-hmm.
On something.
Medical information, for instance.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Or something you don't want people to know about. So this is something that I would suggest our listeners do a little research on. You use a VPN.
I do, especially when I'm using public Wi-Fi. If I'm logging into public Wi-Fi, I have no idea who is watching my activity on that public Wi-Fi. If I'm logging into my email account on public Wi-Fi, I'm definitely going to use a VPN to at least give me one more layer of security between the bad guys and me.
And one of the things I put in the notes is there is a way you can go through Track Me Not, and that is a way to also try to reduce the amount of, breadcrumbs that you would link to you.
Your digital footprint.
A lot of people say, well, why is privacy important? Well, on some level, it isn't important for everything, but on some things, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the real challenges that we're running into, is that we've given so much away
mm-hmm.
through services like Facebook and things like that. At some point, you may need to take some of that back.
And if you wanted to use a non-tracking search engine, DuckDuckGo is the most popular search engine in the world mm-hmm. because it does not track you like Google does.
Sure.
So keep that in mind. Brings us to our Now the News. There's some things happening in the world, and we're going to talk about a few of them. The Senate
has voted that it's okay for your internet service provider to sell your web browsing history to advertisers.
Now, I'm going to give a response to this. Imagine making a phone call through your regular phone, and the telephone company keeping a list of where you called so they could market back to you.
Not only where you called, but maybe even the content of your phone call. Because the ISPs know not only that you went to Google, but then they can track what you searched.
So let's just say I was looking for hair plugs.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I started getting, Bosley, hair club for men.
Yes.
I'm living a worry-free active lifestyle. Now, this is really kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
Under the previous administration, this was voted that we would not have this ability. Right now, this is the new thing that's come through. This should, for a person who should understand their civil liberties are being compromised, this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it still has to go through the House, I think, to pass. It's still, this is a big deal. This is wrong. There's that. I would just say that this is wrong, and this should not be.
It's something to keep your eye on as a citizen of this country, and knowing how important the internet is to us now, and how important our information is. This is something that we need to keep an eye on.
Steve, we've always been known for hard-hitting news that bring the latest important things to us. Steve, give me some hard-hitting news that we should all know about. Maybe something from Cleveland.
This article from Cleveland that you
remember that it's an article. Somebody wrote this.
This is a posted article from Cleveland. The police were called to a Taco Bell because a woman in Cleveland was irate over the fact that they did not have the right taco sauce available for
her. Steve, she wanted mild taco sauce and all she got was fire.
And apparently this bothered her so much that the police had to be involved.
The police had to come. They had to, you know, there was a disturbance going on, and they had to work with this customer, and they made a suggestion that if she could come back the next day and talk to the manager, and she responded. How did she respond, Steve?
She left the building. She thought that was a good idea.
She left the restaurant.
That's a good idea, police officers.
Now, we're looking up for a follow-up to this. We don't know really what's happening. Was this taken care of?
Tune in next week to find out whether she got the mild sauce that she required.
Steve, that was an article. That was a news story.
It was posted in a news website, at least.
So I just want to let you know that we're on top of everything. We're abreast of all the good information.
And we put taco sauce on it.
Steve, there is a way that we could provide pleasure to the world. How would you suggest we do that?
We talked the other week about the idea of the Pizza Hut sneakers, that you could press a button and get Pizza Hut pizza delivered to where you are. Now Miller has decided that a button that allows you to get Miller Lite delivered is a good idea.
So this works a lot like the Amazon Dash buttons,
mm-hmm.
where you press it and all of a sudden Amazon picks up that you have just ordered Tide or
sent on its way to you.
And it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one where you press it and beer is delivered. That brew from Milwaukee, that Miller Lite. But anyway, it's beer
on demand. Beer on demand. I think that's a great name for a podcast.
The question is how quickly will they deliver it? Will the party be still going on when the beer is delivered?
That's a great question. I don't think this works the same way as the sneakers that are GPS-based. This is your Alexa device or your Dash button ordering from Amazon. So it should be there within the next day or two.
All right. And so this is the big, big story. Tonight, if you want to join us, if you're local, you can join us locally. But if you, across the United States, Fathom Events
is giving us another gift. Fathom Events is so great. Those of you who have been in a movie theater and seen these commercials for the Fathom Events have never actually gone to one of these. We love going to these Fathom Events and getting so much interesting information. The one that's happening tonight is called Mind Gamers, and this is like a science experiment / sci-fi movie.
This is so the science fiction movie there is Mind Gamers, but while the movie is going on, it looks like they're hooking up a number of the people in the audience. Could be in our audience, but I'm sure that there are certain locations that are
across the country, people will be connected. Their brains will be connected to the hive mind, and we'll see if we can make something happen.
So there's going to be a science experiment. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, there's going to be a conversation with the actors and the director and with the scientists whose studies this is based on, this movie is based upon. Mm-hmm. So if you want to join us, it's tonight at 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. And you can just inbox us or you know, respond to us on the Facebook feed or the Twitter feed. But if you are not in our area, just find your local movie theater that has Fathom Events and look for Mindgamers.
Yeah, we've go to fathomevents.com and find your local theater and get there.
And we'll have a link in the our notes also.
Yep.
And let's make sure that we're very clear. We've got one more week on Monday, the April 3rd.
Uh-huh.
We have the national championship of the men's basketball.
Oh, how exciting.
And at the end of that, we'll be able to name the guru of our local area. Of all of our listeners, of who was able to pick our national championship winner. Have you been following the games?
No. Oh, no, right. I haven't.
There you go. So Steve hasn't, but he did pick out a number of people to win. And, of course, we do have somebody in the lead right now.
Yeah?
So yes. And if it ended today, they would win. But I don't think they have the championship team picked out.
You don't think so?
I think I looked at it. I think okay. They picked Villanova. Villanova has already lost.
Oh.
So, anyway, this would be a lot of fun. We'll figure out who's going to be our winner of our first time of attempting this.
And we'll announce that sometime in next week's show, right?
Exactly.
All right.
Did I already mention what the prize is going to be? Steve and I are going to show up for a sleepover.
Let's not make that official. let's say the next time we're in a bar together, we'll buy you something. How about that? You and I, whomever the winner is.
I brought popcorn.
There you go. Here's some popcorn. It comes free with walking in the door. So I think we have enough information to survive another week, Chip. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think after spring break we can come back. I think next week's show is still going to be a spring break kind of show, though. I think I'm going to still be lounging and relaxing. We want to thank Mark Brett for coming on and talking about such interesting things that he knows. His vast knowledge is phenomenal. So thank you, Mark. Make sure you go to dork40.com for all of Mark's writing. If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future. I just